like to thank Professor Chowdhury. What we're going to do now is questions. Rather than put this poor man on the spot on his own, we thought we'd invite some other people down to join him and take a seat here, including Professor Chandran, Dr. Breen, if that's okay, and Patrick Mark from the Edinburgh branch of Parkinson's UK. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I'd like to thank, as I said, Professor Chowdhury, for a terrific speech. When I started as a medical student and then as a junior doctor, I remember in a job doing neurology at the very beginning, we were taught Parkinson's disease consists of what are called the movement signs and symptoms were listed out. And this is what we learned for exams at that stage. And there was no mention of all the other sorts of features that Ray has outlined here, which when I do a clinic are often the predominant features that people want to discuss and that affect people's quality of life and day-to-day life. And I think it's down to the work of people like Professor Chowdhury that this has got greater and greater recognition. If you'd like to ask a question, I'd ask that you put up your hand. If you need a microphone brought to you, we have two portable microphones that will be brought into you. If you're near the edge of the room and you want to go to one of the microphones on the wall or the one in the centre, you go to it and press the button and I will point to you and say, our next question is up here. Could I ask that when you are asking a question, just say your name so we know who you are. And if I could ask people to limit themselves to one question so that people get a chance to ask questions. A question up in the middle. No, we'll bring a microphone up to you. Similarly for the panel, if you press the yellow button, the microphone will come on.
I was fascinated by the range of symptoms that you have been describing in the lecture, and I fear that they're not diagnosed as Parkinsonism today. They may be diagnosed by various other departments. You may find yourself fragmented into several departments being treated for different things with these symptoms and with medicines that may counteract each other or may counteract what is really Parkinsonism. How on earth do we get around problems like this until your ideas really get into the mainstream and are part of the first diagnosis of someone suspected to have Parkinsonism or Parkinson's disease?
Can you hear? Yeah. It's a very good question, and I think we are still not there. And there is a problem, as you quite correctly say, that if somebody has, like the person I showed, had 19 different symptoms, how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
Well, the way to deal with that is then to take a rather pragmatic, in my view, sort of slightly holistic view. You have to ask the patient that, okay, what are the things amongst those 19? We can't treat all 19 now. But what are the things amongst that that's bothering you the most? In fact, when I asked that gentleman that question only 2 days back, he said, do something about my dribbling of saliva. Because I like going out, but I can't go to the pub to see my friends, or I can't even go out for dinner because I'm constantly dribbling. Do something about the mood problem that I'm having, is bad mood fluctuation. And thirdly, do something about the pain, if you can. Those would be my top three. And the way I would look at that would be to focus on those three, because if you can improve those three, you're still going to improve the quality of life of that patient and the carer very considerably. The second thing that happens, the person then feels quite happy that somebody's actually talked or listened to some of the other symptoms, which they might have to carry perhaps through their life never discussing. So that brings in the positive aspect of it. Of course, one has to be aware of these symptoms and know how to manage them, and that remains a challenge. But hopefully, with greater awareness, we'll get there.
How does one get out of other departments to concentrate on the neurology department when you're being treated in several directions simultaneously?
Have we another question? We'll go here first. If you press the button there.
Yeah. Thank you. It was a very interesting lecture. Thank you very much. It's a double question, if I may. firstly, what percentage of the Parkinson's disease patients are presenting without non-motor syndromes? And the other side of the question is, does the levodopa and other dopaminergic drugs alleviate the effects of the non-motor syndromes?
Your first question, we've got now very good data from our database of almost 2,000 patients, and overall 1% of that whole group do not have non-motor syndromes. 99% have, on average, 5 different non-motor symptoms, 99%. And that ranges from untreated Parkinson's to very advanced disease. Of course, in the very advanced stages, the number of non-motor symptoms goes up considerably, but the profile changes as well. These patients will have more cognitive issues, more problems with sleepiness, fall, urinary problems, and so on. I think the second question is a very important one. We've also, in fact, written about this, that dopaminergic drugs can also help some of these non-motor problems. But to do that, we really need to identify